नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement in the modern day. We should not have any doubts about that. This Christmas marathon is a chance given by Krishna how we can increase our service. Now, it's not endless. There's a certain amount of time, and during those certain days, you can focus on Srila Prabhupada's mission, focus on Lord Chaitanya's mercy, and in this way, you can bring your consciousness, your Vaishnava consciousness, to a higher level. How is that possible? Because you have the facility how to engage your mind and senses fully in distributing Krishna consciousness to others. We should try to understand how rare that facility is. Krishna says in the Gita, no one is more dear to him than the one who distributes his glories to others. So now you have an organized setting by which you can become the most dear to Krishna. That is not an ordinary thing. Here in New Dwarka, you have good sankirtan management, good temple management, and the airport facility. All these things combine together to give you a great opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. We should not take it for granted. Sometimes it can seem like, oh, we've seen this airport day after day. But what I'd like to beg you all is that during this marathon, if you can beg the deities, please give me new insight into this airport distribution. I've been going there for some time, and no doubt, it can seem to be the same thing, or sometimes it feels like a grind, because there's austerity. But during this Christmas marathon, if you beg Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, give me a new vision, a higher vision of what's going on in this service, you'll be surprised at what happens. The deities are there for you to beg, but you have to know what to beg the deities for. If you beg the deities, give me new insight into this service. Let me see a glimpse of what's really going on. You'll be amazed. Krishna will reciprocate with you. It's not that we're sending out waves of devotees on Sankirtan and they're going to get no realization. But you have to know how to ask for the realization. You have to know how to beg for it. You beg Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. This is the most confidential activity I can be doing, yet sometimes I don't see it that way. So you please raise my vision. You raise my perceptions. And then, if you're fortunate, if you beg sincerely, and you get a glimpse, just a glimpse into the ocean of Sankirtan, you'll never forget it all your life. Now, this is a chance for new devotees who are newer to Sankirtan, that is, to really make a breakthrough. I can tell you from my own personal experience, Bhrigupati, he can confirm. I did Sankirtan 7 days a week in New York, and I couldn't do anything. And for 2 years, I went out every day, and I do a few books here, a few books there, nothing at all. They used to call me the hard luck kid. I was even party leader because evidently I was trying a bit hard, but I just couldn't get any results. Then one Christmas marathon at the start, I prayed to the deities because I hadn't been able to do big books for 2 years. That was the supreme destination back then, to be able to do a Bhagavatam or a Gita. I was just doing small books, you know, Krishna book, paperback trilogies, we call them. So I prayed to the deities. It's 2 years now. Please, I'm begging you. Just give me a chance. I'll never forget it. So I went out to the parking lot, the shopping center, and I said, okay, I'm just going to do like the big guys do. The airport distributors, Tipperary, Savas, all the others. soon as I drive up into the parking lot, I'm just going to open the trunk of the car and pull out the big books, and whoever is right near, I'm going to approach them without even loading up my book bag, just immediately into it. So I did that. First person took hardcover book. Second person, third person. By the time an hour or two had passed, I had done like 15 hardcover books, and I was just trembling in ecstasy because I knew this wasn't me. After 2 years and 7 days a week doing nothing, there was no way I was going to think I was the doer. I never forgot that realization all my life. So I remember Bhrigu Bhatti and another devotee, Darshi, coming up to me like, what's going on? What's come over you? What happened? Because here you have somebody who's just doing a few magazines, a few small books a day, and all of a sudden, on a dime, they turn and they're doing quantities of hardcover books. So it continued on like that. And when I got back to the temple, Sankirtan leader Romapad, Ramacharya, he was astonished. What's going on? I knew that definitely Lord Caitanya and Lord Nityananda, their mercy is factual. There was no way I could think I was the doer. Impossible. This can happen to anyone. You should not think that you're totally bound by your circumstances and it'll always be the same thing. You have to make some kind of endeavor to go to a higher level with the help of the deities. And you have such beautiful deities here, such beautiful deity worship. You beg for their help and your service will go to a higher level. And these marathons are the perfect time for that. We should take our scores very seriously. Not in a material way. But they're showing how Lord Caitanya's mercy is going out. Sometimes devotees have a misunderstanding about scores. They think, oh, it's a material thing. But Prabhupada loved to hear the scores. When we were reading the scores of Prabhupada, he would never say, oh, that's just quantity. That's just, that's nothing to do with being a Vaishnava. He never would say anything like that. What did Prabhupada say? Does anyone know one of Prabhupada's famous quotes in reaction to hearing the scores? What's that? Yes. Another one? My only solace is the scores. Not when I hear the scores, oh, this is just quantity, these are just numbers, this is not the real Krishna consciousness movement, it's time to get beyond those things. No, my only solace are the scores. So, your service is directly giving pleasure to Prabhupada's mission. If we take it as bhakti, not just ordinary book sales, but bhakti, that means in doing the service you have to depend on Krishna. Your hearing and chanting has to be very sharp. Your attention before the deities has to be very focused. So it's a set time. It's not like endless. One thing you can do, you can just tell yourself, look, I give all I've got for the next 10 days or so, then after that we'll see what happens. As far as I'm concerned, you know, Christmas Day, or some of you are going on a bit longer, that's the end of it for me. I can't see beyond that. I've got X amount of days, 10 days, 12 days, 14 days. I'm giving all I've got, and then after that, Krishna's got to take care of the situation. I don't know what's going to happen. This is the kind of bhakti that attracts Krishna's attention. We have that natural tendency to want to always think, well, what will I be doing 5 years from now? What will I be doing 10 years from now? And that kind of presses down on your day and reduces your intensity. So a marathon is a great chance to surrender to Krishna by thinking, I've got X amount of days, I'm not going to worry about anything else for those days. After, you can worry about so many things. You can make a deal with yourself like that. Afterwards, I'll worry what my future will be or this or that. Yeah. I'll pick up my anxieties and worries again and my self-deliberations. But during these days, I just set it all aside. I don't know what's going to become of me after the end of the marathon. That's up to Krishna. But for now, I absorb myself fully. If you do like that, you'll see Krishna reciprocate with you without a doubt. Krishna will reciprocate with you. These are the ways how to plunge into the nectar of Christmas marathon. It's not just a ritual. It's not just the same old, same thing. It is an opportunity for bhakti. It go about it right. And you'll certainly feel, if you do it this way, at the end of the marathon, you'll certainly feel when you come before the deeds, the blessings of the Lord. And that you'll never forget. So this is my point. Especially the new devotees, those new are on Sankirtan, you should understand this point. That you want to get some God experience. You see, what's making you slow and sluggish is you still might think that Krishna is nice theology, nice philosophy. No. Through this book distribution, you'll get the most intense experiences of God. You'll become a God-realized person. Why? Because you're distributing Krishna's glories. As Prabhupada once explained, it's not that the distributor is giving out Krishna's mercy so people can go back to Godhead, and the distributor himself doesn't go back to Godhead. No, Krishna makes arrangements so that you become more God-realized, and then you become more effective in your distribution. Because you're more effective in your distribution, more people get Krishna's mercy. And this way, everything increases all the way around. So don't make the mistake of thinking, I'm distributing all these books, so I'm working so hard, and what's going to become of me? That's what slows down the marathon. What's going to become of me? I mean, yeah, the books are going out, and yeah, this and that, but what about me and my mind? No, you don't want to do like that. You want to understand, I have a chance to experience the divine presence of Krishna beyond theory, beyond religious belief. And how am I doing that? Because I am assisting Lord Chaitanya in distributing the flood of love of God. Don't think you know your limits during the Christmas marathon. I gave you just a small example from my insignificant life. Overnight, not even overnight, one moment to the next, change completely. Completely. Yeah. That can happen to anyone. If you look at this marathon as an opportunity for making spiritual advancement, then everything becomes clear. It's not that we're just sending out devotees just because there's nothing else to do or because that's the way it's always been done in the 70s. No. This is bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is eternal. What does bhakti yoga mean? Engaging your senses to satisfy the master of the senses. And the master of the senses says, no one's more dear to me, nor will there ever be one more dear to me than the one who distributes my glories. So we've got to take it from the top. We take it from Krishna. Now, you have Prabhupada's books. The most effective means for distributing Krishna consciousness. No one can deny that. We have the chance to personally intervene in people's suffering just by their taking a book. Sometimes it's said, well, this book distribution is a technique of the 70s. But I ask you, is personally reducing someone's suffering by putting the Prabhupada's book in their hand, is that just a technique of the 70s? Personally reducing people's suffering is an eternal compassionate act of Lord Chaitanya. So as I said in class the other day, Prabhupada explained in Australia, if the people just take a book in their hands and appreciate it, this is a nice book, and they don't even buy it, Prabhupada said that is enough to give them a human form of life in the next birth. I couldn't believe it. I played the tape over and over again, 30 times. I said, what? This is an extraordinary point to remember. You're not just selling books. You are completely intervening in someone's chain of repeated birth and death. You're totally being an instrument in adjusting their karma and changing the whole future of their life. This was the realization that the older book distributors had. You may wonder, how did those older book distributors keep going? They were fortunate. Prabhupada was there. The fortunate thing was they had this realization that they understood the enormity of what they were doing. And we can still have that realization today. And naturally, without that realization, you're going to become a bit dry, and you're going to think, what's the point of all this? But if you beg the deities and you listen to the senior Vaishnavas, if you study Prabhupada's statements, you'll get a glimpse into what this Sankirtan activity is all about. And that's something you'll never forget. Practically, even devotees who have, shall we say, put aside book distribution these days, older devotees who have put aside book distribution, they all will admit, when I was doing it, Those were the best years of my life. They'll all admit that. Then, for various reasons, they may not be into it now, but at least they admit, those were the best years of my life. Now, that is a very powerful point. Even those who are not distributing books now will admit, the best years of my life when I was doing it. So I think that those are the best years of your life then, let it be everyone's best years now. It makes sense, doesn't it? If those are the best years of your life then everybody should have a chance to make it the best years of their life now. Now, why were they the best years of their life? Because you were fully absorbed in distributing Lord Caitanya's glories with austerity. This is a problem, you see. Sooner or later, we're going to have to understand that Krishna consciousness involves austerity. Yeah, I mean, there's no way around it. Now, you can package it this way and that way, but sooner or later, you have to accept the point that to advance in bhakti, you voluntarily accept inconvenience for Krishna's pleasure. And then the Lord reciprocates with you. This is something every Sankirtan devotee will know, that Krishna is reciprocating with me. I don't know if you noticed, but after that, all the scores were read this morning, there was definitely, you could feel the pleasure of Prabhupada. Definitely you can feel like, yes, I'm involved in the mainstream of Krishna consciousness. The mainstream of Krishna consciousness is not what people make it to be. It is what Lord Caitanya and his representatives make it to be. This is a very essential point if you're going to survive in book distribution. The mainstream of Krishna consciousness is what the acharyas make it to be, not what the people in general make it to be. If you try to define your Krishna consciousness according to what the people in general think, you're not going to go back to Godhead. Therefore, we look at what the acharyas say. We take our precepts there. We look at Prabhupada's example. We look at what Prabhupada asked us to do. Everyone knows how Prabhupada came to America with just a little bit of money in his pocket, but 200 of his three-volume Bhagavatam sets. He said, I wasn't worried if I had those 200 sets with me. But he set the example. Now, you might say, well, that was back then, but haven't times changed? No. Have you seen that people can become Krishna conscious any better way than with Srila Prabhupada's books? Has their delight in reading Prabhupada's books changed? No. If anything has changed, maybe some of us have changed, and that may be a problem. But the actual saving potency of Prabhupada's books is still the same. So we have to adjust to that. That hasn't changed. I know all you distributors have experienced the nectar.
Mothers and the calves' mothers were totally
bring into the world Krishna conscious children.
Fear and anxiety that I'll be left unfulfilled. So please think about that, because it's behind the consciousness of so many of us. The fear that
take up the family responsibility, and then at the right time, you still have to walk away.
After I do so much for Krishna, like we're doing so much.
There's no great mystery about that. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Vududo Bhuteshu Kamosmi, I am sex life according to religious principles. I mean, I don't have any experience, but I heard Prabhupada say, you can experience Krishna in this way. So what is the mystery about what to do? Of course, you have to be a qualified
someone taking a book from you.
Husband. That means you have to be able to take the dependents and your spouse. You have to be able to give help in going back to Godhead. Anything else? Yes. there can't be morality without God. This is what so many of our parents have tried. Just be a good citizen. Just be a good human being. But you're left at the mercy of the modes of nature, and they drag you down, and you begin to think very wisely according to the influence of Maya. If there's no God, there's no controller, and there's no reactions to what I do in a next life, what does it matter? Anyone will start thinking like that. Why should I be a good citizen? Why should I follow morality? Give me one good reason. The good of society means me. I want to enjoy. Sure. If I can steal and engage in all sorts of sexual affairs and do anything I can to please my senses, why shouldn't I? Give me one good reason why I shouldn't, since it's a godless morality. Why should I think that the good of society is some abstract conception? That's what all the music these people are listening to says. Don't worry about all that stuff. Just, if you feel angry, kill. If you feel lusty, have sex. Don't worry about anything. Why shouldn't I think like that? It doesn't matter what I do. There's no reaction. So all that talk about godless morality never works, because without God consciousness, you're left at the mercy of the modes of nature.
Or I know that you've experienced the nectar of someone who's already gotten the book and then coming to and expressing how nice the book was. That hasn't changed. These things are still going on. This is the eternal activity of Lord Chaitanya.
Verses of this chapter, or by modernized advancement of scientific knowledge, without the help of God or demigod, are illusory only. For despite all such plans for happiness, the conditioned living being within the compass of material creation can never solve the problems of life, namely birth, death, old age, and disease. The history of the universe is full of such plan makers, and many kings and emperors come and go, leaving a plan-making story only. But the prime problems of life remain unsolved, despite all endeavors by such plan makers. Actually, human life is meant for making a solution to the problems of life. One can never solve such problems by satisfying the different demigods, by different modes of worship, or by so-called scientific advancement in knowledge, without the help of God or the demigods. Apart from the gross materialists, who care very little either for God or the demigods, the Vedas recommend worship of different demigods for different benefits. And so the demigods are neither false nor imaginary. The demigods are as factual as we are, but they are much more powerful due to their being engaged in the direct service of the Lord in managing different departments in the universal government. The Bhagavad Gita affirms this, and the different planets of the demigods are mentioned there, including the one of the supreme demigod, Lord Brahma. The gross materialists do not believe in the existence of God or the demigods, nor do they believe that different planets are dominated by different demigods. They are creating a great commotion about reaching the closest celestial body, Chandraloka, or the moon. But even after much mechanical research, they have only very scanty information of this moon. And in spite of much false advertisement for selling land on the moon, the puffed-up scientists or gross materialists cannot live there. And what to speak of reaching the other planets, which they are unable even to count. However, the followers of the Vedas have a different method of acquiring knowledge. They accept the statements of the Vedic literatures as authority in toto, as we have already discussed in Canto 1, and therefore they have full and reasonable knowledge of God and demigods, and of their different residential planets, situated within the compass of the material world and beyond the limit of the material sky. The most authentic Vedic literature accepted by the great Indian acharyas like Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka, and Chaitanya, and studied by all the important personalities of the world, is the Bhagavad Gita, in which the worship of the demigods and their respective residential planets are maintained. The Bhagavad Gita affirms, Yanti Devalvata Devan Titrin Yanti Pativata Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja Yanti Mad Yajino Pimam. The worshippers of demigods reach the respective planets of the demigods, and the worshippers of forefathers reach the planets of the forefathers. The gross materialist remains in the different material planets, but the devotees of the Lord reach the planet of God, kingdom of God. We also have information from the Bhagavad Gita that all the planets within the material world, including Brahmaloka, are but temporarily situated, and after a fixed period, they are all annihilated. Therefore, the demigods and their followers are all annihilated at the period of devastation. But one who reaches the kingdom of God gets a permanent share in eternal life. That is the verdict of Vedic literature. The worshippers of the demigods have one facility more than the unbelievers, due to their being convinced of the Vedic version, by which they can get information of the benefit of worshiping the Supreme Lord in the association of the devotees of the Lord. The gross materialist, however, without any faith in the Vedic version, remains eternally in darkness, driven by a false conviction on the basis of imperfect experimental knowledge or so-called material science, which can never reach into the realm of transcendental knowledge. Therefore, unless the gross materialists or the worshippers of the temporary demigods come in contact with a transcendentalist like the pure devotee of the Lord, their attempts are simply a waste of energy. Only by the grace of the divine personalities, the pure devotees of the Lord, can one achieve pure devotion, which is the highest perfection of human life. Only a pure devotee of the Lord can show one the right way of progressive life. Otherwise, both the materialistic way of life, without any information of God or the demigods, and the life engaged in the worship of demigods, in pursuit of temporary material enjoyments, are different phases of phantasmagoria. They are nicely explained in the Bhagavad Gita also, but the Bhagavad Gita can be understood in the association of pure devotees only, and not by the interpretations of politicians or dry philosophical spectators. Om Gyanati Madam Nisya. Gyananjana Shataya. Chakshun Maritam Yena. Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. In this very lengthy purport, Srila Prabhupada is giving an outline of the Vedic civilization with its processes for achieving material and spiritual elevation. We were speaking last Sunday why it is that Westerners have a tough time with the Vedic system, and especially Bhagavad Gita. You see, in Bhagavad Gita, it is not only that your spiritual activities and duties are prescribed and defined, but also your material activities are prescribed and defined. There is no room left for speculation and concoction, even on the material plane. That is why Krishna is not only telling Arjuna to surrender to him, that is the topmost instruction, of course. But Krishna is also telling Arjuna, by the way, even when we look at your situation from the material point of view, you have to fight. Krishna says, considering your specific duty as a kshatriya, there's no better course of action for you than to fight. So, you cannot do your own thing spiritually or materially. And this goes totally against the Western so-called civilization and culture, in which self-expression and freelance creativity is considered the highest goal of life. Just do what you feel when you feel like it, and your life is successful. According to Bhagavad Gita, that means your life has become condemned, not even from the spiritual point of view, but also from the material point of view. You see, Bhagavad Gita is pointing out to you in so many ways that because both the spiritual and material energies belong to Krishna, therefore Krishna has a system for you, no matter what energy you take shelter of. The plans and schemes of the Lord are there in the material energy also. So, Krishna provides a whole system for those who, for some reason or other, do not want to approach Him directly. You can worship the demigods, but at least when you're worshiping the demigods, you're acknowledging the Vedic system. And actually, in all the puja for the demigods, there's reference to Vishnu. We think that healthy life means a life in which you can do whatever you like with no one telling you how to do it. This impulse has to be resisted. This is a very bestial and animalistic impulse which destroys the human form of life. We think there's nothing better than to have a life in which you don't have to listen to anybody and you can do whatever you like when you want to do it. But according to the Vedic standard, this is hellish life. It will not give you spiritual perfection and it won't even give you material progress. Now, what actually is going on in terms of material life and the material world? We think we're so expert in terms of ordinary affairs and practical affairs, but we don't even know what's going on in material life. This is the dense darkness of ignorance that so enshrouds whole countries and the whole planet today. The dense darkness of ignorance is such that, yes, of course, no one understands Krishna, but they can't even understand what are the essential factors of their life. This purport gives you those factors. And Prabhupada, throughout his books, always brings these points up. And you may catch yourself tuning them out, because you've heard them so many times. But actually, instead of tuning them out, you have to apply your consciousness and ask yourself, here's what it says. Why am I tuning it out? I've heard it so many times, but why do I just make myself insensitive when I hear these things? So what is it that's really going on with our life? We have problems that we're supposed to solve. And we've heard it again and again. Janma mrityu jaradi dukkha doshana dasha. Yes, we're supposed to solve the problems of birth, death, disease, and old age. This is not just a poetry that we're reciting. This is not just some song. This is the actual reality. My life is meant to solve problems. Someone who has that understanding can take part in Krishna consciousness. And ashram life is meant for dealing with those problems. How are you going to stop the cycle of repeated birth and death? So real intelligence, which you get here, as Narantara Das pointed out so eloquently yesterday, real intelligence means how to arrange my life to stop these problems of birth, death, disease, and old age. That means you just don't repeat these things idly, although even by repeating them, you'll get benefit. You think when you wake up in the morning, what am I going to do today to put a stop to this problem? How am I going to put a stop to repeated birth and death? What's my plan? What's my program? In Bhagavad Gita, as we explained in the previous class, Prabhupada says that a yogi is one who uses his senses according to a pre-designed plan. So we're all supposed to be yogis. We are the real yogis, rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. So we have to ask ourselves when every day starts and every week starts, what is my plan for utilizing my senses? How am I going to control my senses according to a plan? This is what makes up ashram life, whether you are a brahmachari or grihastha. Because no matter what ashram you're in, you have a body. And what does it mean that you have a body? It means you have senses. Indriyani pranayahu. Now, what are you going to do with those senses so that you solve your problems? That is your responsibility. So we might say, oh, I've heard this so many times. But have we heard it enough that we make a plan? Or are we just drifting by day after day? Well, I believe in Krishna, that's enough. No, our process is that there is a plan for you to use your senses, and then there is success. Otherwise, if we still have that Western disease of, oh, I just want to be happy and that's all that counts, we will not make any progress in Krishna consciousness. I'll give you an example, which I perhaps explained a few times in Bhagavad Gita class, but maybe not in Bhagavatam class. Prabhupada was speaking to a news reporter in Australia. Prabhupada, when he went to Australia, he immediately picked up, obviously, on the nature of the Australians, in which they like it head-on. They like to take punch straight on the nose. So Prabhupada didn't disappoint them. He had a few news reporters who came and asked the stock poke questions that, why do you guys dress like this, and why do you use incense, or things like that. And then they went and wrote the usual sensationalistic articles. So then the final reporter came, and he was a real sweetie. He was a good guy. He came to Prabhupada very humbly. I know what those other reporters have done. I've seen their articles. I don't like it. I'm coming here to present a fair article, and I come to hear from you. So naturally, you'd think that Prabhupada would be on his best behavior to properly, you know, pamper the guy and flatter him. Now, the guy came to Prabhupada humbly, so Prabhupada took it that you want knowledge. You want to understand. And so Prabhupada proceeded to deliver knowledge to him. Not that, oh, you come and present yourself so nicely, therefore we'll just flatter you and that's it. No. The man presented himself humbly. In other words, I want to do some service, he said. I'm going to write a good article. So Prabhupada immediately took him to task and proceeded to try to deliver him from material existence. So Prabhupada said, all right, what is the goal of life? And the man said, oh, but Swamiji, I come here to ask you what the goal of life is. You tell me. And the Prabhupada said, no. You tell me what is the goal of life. And the man was still hesitating. Oh, no. You please explain. And Prabhupada kept pushing him. No, you be guru. You tell me what is the goal of life. So this way, Prabhupada got him to put his cards on the table. So finally, the man kind of said, oh, the goal of life is to, I just want to find happiness within myself. Now, I know most of you will be thinking, well, that's very pious. Very nice. And we're sure Prabhupada was pleased with that answer, and we're sure that Prabhupada congratulated him. I just want to find happiness within myself. No. As soon as he said that, Prabhupada nailed him. That is dog's happiness. And the man was totally astonished. Like, you know, he thought it was a real spiritual thing to want to find happiness within yourself. And granted, most of us, if we're at the airport or preaching to somebody and they say the goal of life is to find happiness within themselves, we'd be happy. Wow, I got a good one. But Prabhupada, he's, as you all know, on another level. And so he just took it in his way. You want to find happiness within yourself? That is the same thing that a dog is doing. The man was taken aback. The devotees were taken aback, right? What's wrong with trying to find happiness within yourself? That's why we're here too, the devotees were thinking. We want to find happiness within ourselves. Then Prabhupada began to explain that when you see a dog barking on the street, a stranger walks by and the dog barks at the stranger. The dog is finding happiness within himself. I never thought about it. Now whenever I see a dog barking, I think he's finding happiness within himself. So the man was still puzzled. What's wrong with finding happiness within yourself as a goal of life? And then Prabhupada explained, you'll never find happiness within yourself until you solve the problem of birth, death, disease, and old age. Therefore, the intelligent person doesn't look for happiness within himself or herself. The intelligent person tries to stop repeated birth and death. So this goes totally against how we've been raised and what we've been taught and the things that are in the material atmosphere right now. And we're seeing that due to the prevalence of New Age notions, which are no longer anything fringe, they're mainstream in society now, that many people come to Krishna consciousness with that idea that, oh, I just want to find happiness within myself, that's why I'm here. And even devotees who have been here for a long time in Krishna consciousness, they also can become influenced that, look, you know, I just want to, you know, find my own type of happiness. I'll be left with an empty heart. I'll become old. And I've missed out on good sense gratification. I will never So now you have, oh, within myself, I wish everybody would just leave me alone, let me do that. But let us realize we have a wonderful facility how to make advancements. Have a problem to solve. And you know how you all can be when you have a problem you know you have to solve. You mobilize all your resources. You think about it. You take action. You consult others. What is that problem? Birth, death, disease, and old age. We heard it so much. But do we have a systematic program for dealing with it? Do we have a plan? So this is how Prabhupada is teaching us to think. The Bhagavatam is thinking education. And this Krishna consciousness movement is creating thinking men and women.